From the Silver Dawn team that brings you Soapbox Sunday, Tammy and Kathy dive into gritty and informative topics about aging, dementia, and healthcare. Their real and wholehearted conversations dig deep for authentic connection and understanding.
Good evening and welcome to Silver Dawn Radio. This is Tammy Newman, your host, and sitting next to me is my talented and lovely host, Kathy Braxton. So here we are again. We're so excited because this is our second week broadcasting live. Last week we had the great opportunity to be in Washington, D.C. at the American Society on Aging Conference, Aging in America, and we got to speak to the youngest board member on ASA, who happens to be 26 years old, Olympia Terrell. That was a fabulous conversation that we had with her, where she talked a lot about how can millennials work with boomers in the workforce. Yeah. And that was really kind of a great conversation, wasn't it, Kathy?
It was. And it's interesting, now we're in Chicago, another city with just the best traffic in the whole wide world. We had a lot of fun with that last week, too.
Absolutely. Traffic is not my friend.
No.
So Kathy often has to take the wheel for me when we're in foreign lands, such as D.C. and Chicago, right? But today we're in Chicago, Illinois, and we are very glad to have Dr. Griffin Myers with us from Oak Street Health. So, Griffin, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So, Oak Street Health, I don't think many people know much about Oak Street Health and what it's about. So I'm going to ask you to tell us a little bit about how you came up with the idea of Oak Street Health, because I know you're not one to tell us much about your background, so maybe you can tell us about the background of Oak Street Health instead.
Sure. Yeah, and I would say in Chicago, people probably know about us. Outside Chicago, they probably don't. My background is, among a few other things, I'm an emergency physician by training. I'm a board-certified emergency physician, and I spent lots of my life in hospitals. And I in my early 30s, would work overnight in the emergency department in scrubs and tennis shoes waiting for sick people to come in. And what I constantly found was that it wasn't young people or well-off people, young people, who were coming in over and over again. It was the same typically older, typically low-income folks with not acute diseases. They weren't being struck by lightning. They had the same chronic conditions that we seem to have in older populations, things like diabetes and COPD and congestive heart failure. And the reason for that wasn't that they're bad people. It was typically that they didn't have a great advocate, what I say, on the outside, meaning in the real world. And what I really mean by that is a primary care doctor. They didn't have great access to primary care for somebody specifically focused on older adults to help them navigate those conditions. And so it turns out that what I was seeing was not only true in my hospitals at the time I was living in Boston, but it's true all over the country. And the average older adult has not a lot of great access to primary care and has a lot of disease. And so that was really what the goal was to, in terms that older adults could understand in their neighborhoods, provide that care, keep them well and out of the hospital.
So now that you told us a little bit about the idea behind what kind of was the catalyst to put Oak Street Health together, maybe you can tell us a little bit about maybe the model, the care model of Oak Street Health.
Sure. What underlies the care model, so force me to come back to that,
is a very
different way of organizing your practice. And I should tell you ahead of time that our competition at Oak Street is not other practices. It is the fact that people haven't heard of us and that the current healthcare system is set up in a manner that doesn't serve patients. So I say this, and I don't say anything bad about other practices. I have the luxury of getting to take the high road because I believe in our team and what we're doing, and our patients have responded to it. But the system is one that's set up today in a manner that's called fee-for-service. It means that doctor provides service and patient pays fee. It's the same thing that you do when you go get your hair cut. You sit down, you get a haircut. They provided that service. You pay whatever fee they ask. There tends to be a little bit more transparency when you get your haircut as to what you're going to pay. And they also don't tell you that we're going to cut the right half now, stop, and then tell you to come back and cut the left half.
Right.
But that's not uncommon in medicine. Again, so that's nobody's fault. That was the best of intentions that got us where we are. And what we needed to do to practice the way we want to practice was blow that up.
Yeah.
And what that means is that we need to be a practice where we get paid for delivering a health outcome for a patient. And what that means in our terms is keep them happy, healthy, and out of the hospital. And I've got both that term, happy, healthy, and out of the hospital, also very technical metrics that line up with each one of those. I measure happy, I measure healthy, and I measure out of the hospital. And if we don't deliver on those things, then we don't get paid and we don't survive. And certainly it's, as you might imagine, there's a lot of complexity behind that. Not a lot. I mean, that is really the way it works. So you ask about our care model. What we've built is a practice that thrives when our patients thrive. That underlies it. That's the foundation. The care model then is built exclusively around older adults and tackling, like I said, the chronic diseases that they have.
So this concept of keeping them happy and keeping them healthy, and you talked about, because I kind of want to go to, okay, so this is where I want to go. When I first found out about Oak Street Health is when I actually met Alderman Carr from Blue Island at a Chamber of Commerce meeting. Had no idea exactly who she was. She ended up inviting me to take a tour of Oak Street Health, and I was blown away by what I saw there. After working for 20 years within the senior care industry, I was like, what are they doing? Why hasn't anybody thought of this before? And one of the things that amazed me, I was able to sit down with the physician at the Blue Island community, and, you know, just hearing her say, you know, I get the chance to spend sometimes 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 40 minutes with my patient. And I was like, how are you doing this? How is this happening? And, but I also see the benefit because so many physicians now are maybe 6 minutes with a patient. So that was one of the things that stood out to me, that you're really working hard at creating relationships, whether it's just that relationship from the patient to the physician, whether it's the relationship even further within that community. And I think that's something that we should really talk about further. First, maybe you can talk about how are you able to give that physician that flexibility and that room to really learn about that patient in that time frame.
Yeah, there's a lot there. So first of all, you met Dr. Peralta Machado, who goes by Dr. Francine, who's a rock star.
Yes.
And she's a board-certified geriatrician and understands older adults in as meaningful a way as you can. You know, the first thing that I would ask is, so we have studied this, not at Oak Street, but researchers have studied. So you think visits with the primary care doctor, are they getting longer or shorter over time? What do you think?
Oh, well, you know what? I have a great doctor, so I'm going to say mine are
average nationwide.
On average, I know that they're going down.
So everybody says that. There's a survey that is done every year. That's the National Ambulatory Healthcare Survey, and it's available. It's paid for by the government, so you can look at it. It's actually gone up from about 16.3 minutes to 18 minutes over.
Really?
And the data that I'm telling you is last from 2010, just because that's when I memorized it last. But there's a reason why it feels shorter, right? Because if 100 years ago, the way that we practice was guts and relationship and art, and that's fine. That's not really what you want. What you want is actual science being applied to problems. And the reason I say this is, you know, 50 years ago, if somebody was having a massive heart attack, we called in quotation marks medical management. Hopefully we gave them an aspirin and we crossed our fingers because that's the extent of the intervention. Now we have so much more that we can do. And because of that, we have so much more information to get. Now we've got computers in the room. So the amount of time that we're spending is longer, but the amount that we're expected to do is way, way, way longer. And that's why it feels so much shorter. And I'll tell you that the bar that I use in our practice is that everything that we do with our patients, it's a really simple standard. I would need to have my family have the same level of care. So I do think you need more time, particularly with older adults. The way that we do that, is first of all, like I said, I don't get paid to go fast, right? Our practice does not make money by seeing how many patients we can pack in a day. Mm-hmm. So that blows that up from the very beginning. But the other thing is there is a lot of questions. So every one of our patients, according to the best evidence, and I think for folks who have a background in medicine or in epidemiology, that term has meaning. But for folks who may be, a little bit less nerdy, what that means is we have great evidence. Scientists and researchers study, and we know exactly what they recommend for particular conditions. But that is what I would want for my family. Mm-hmm. Layered on top of that is a lot of time and a lot of listening and a lot of ability to understand the context of where you're coming from. But in order to practice evidence-based medicine, we have a lot to pack in. So we have to spend that time. And I encourage our patients to think about time spent with the doctor, not just in how long is your visit, but how often are you visiting? Because both of those things give you the time that you need. Okay. And for us, I can tell you that according to a pretty similar data set, the average older adult sees their PCP, their primary care doctor, a little over 3 times a year. And then interestingly, they see more than one PCP when they do that, right? And the reason for that is not because they don't like the person, it's that they pick up the phone and they call, and that person can fit them in, they call somebody else. And so you get into this thing where I'm making 3 or 4 visits a year with 2 different people. The average visit's 18 minutes. So you get about a half hour a year, a little more than that, 40 minutes a year. And again, that's nobody's fault. That's the system that we're in. And so by blowing up the constraint of I have to go fast to get paid and stay in business, that's one thing. And the other thing is I should say I'm not a primary care doctor. I'm not a geriatrician. I've come to love them, and I consider myself an honorary PCP. But I'm trained in emergency medicine and trauma, and I'm trained to go very quickly. Our docs focus on those relationships, and the goal is to take time, be very structured, build a relationship, listen, and we'll see people more often. Mm-hmm. But you start to see that benefit, and you start to see those relationships, and that's really where it comes in.
I think that it was something that really stuck out to me is how not only how hard is that physician working to build that relationship, but the whole entire community is there built to build relationships. You know, even I know that Tony Tovar has, told us a little bit about in the winter, you even use your communities as a place for people to come in and be warm. And I think there's something that, you're set up much differently. You have a community center like Feel. You have people there doing all sorts of different things. And I think that goes really far in saying how important relationship building is to you. So maybe you can speak a little bit more to some of those things.
Yeah, just going back to what does the evidence say, because it's always nice to know that when somebody studies something extensively, something you're doing fits with that. We have lots of data that shows that people who are socially engaged and participate and have active relationships live longer, and every healthcare metric that you want to look at is better. So start with that. We know it matters. It's not just touchy-feely stuff. People do better when they're engaged in their community. The other thing that we're really proud of here at Oak Street is the diversity of the people we take care of and what comes with diversity. And look, everybody knows this. We have a great country we should be really proud of. One of the things that we've got to look at addressing are the disparities that we have in our communities when it comes to healthcare. For us, being able to be a part of that solution makes a difference. And in a lot of cases, we are the place where older adults in their community can go and meet new people and visit with friends and spend time with people their age and participate in activity that they want to participate in. So you're right. Every one of our clinics, on average, they're about 10,000 square feet. So it's big for a physician's office. But the first, 1,500 square feet is a community center built exclusively for older adults with a person who's there, who works there, whose job is to create programming that is friendly to older adults. We'll do Thursday afternoon bingo is probably the biggest thing, but we do movie night. We'll do lunch and learns. We'll have specialists come give talks on healthcare topics. We've got Michael Jackson impersonator who comes and goes through the centers. A lot of times people will ask me, what does that have to do with healthcare? But if what we're able to do is have people not be afraid of going to the doctor and understand that participating in the community and participating with primary care, that's an engaged patient, right? And everything in the world we know, patient engagement is the true blockbuster drug. It's better than any new drug or any new pacemaker we could create. If somebody wants to participate in their healthcare and they're engaged and active in pursuing it, it's better than any medication we can give.
Absolutely. Now, if you're just joining us here on Silver Dawn Radio, we are talking with Oak Street Health's Dr. Myers, and we are having a great conversation about what Oak Street Health is all about, and we talked a little bit about what the care model is, and I know that Kathy is sitting across from me right now. She's just itching to dig deep into some questions here. She's laughing at me right now, but
yeah.
I'm gonna have her ask a couple of questions to Dr.
Okay,
Myers.
So my first question is a comment is, I mean, Tammy was so enamored with Oak Street Health that she dragged me there, and I wasn't kicking or screaming, but was very pleasantly surprised when I saw how it was set up as well. But the same thing, oh my God, why haven't we done this before? And one of the things that we learned there when we went on the tour is that the doctors have the ability to spend a really good amount of time with people face to face and not face in a computer because there's someone else in the room taking notes. What is that person called?
Their business card says clinical informatics specialist, but we just call them the ninja.
The ninja. I kept thinking it was a scribe.
Yeah, the ninja.
It's a ninja. Okay, yeah. The ninja. And I just think that that's a fantastic, I mean, because I think maybe what you're saying is the time is elongating that we're spending with doctors.
Yeah.
Per the evidence, but like you said, if they're the ones taking all the notes, then it does feel like they're not paying attention to us, they're not making eye contact, they're not asking how our families were, none of that is happening. The other thing I had to ask was, I know you talked a lot about how the older adults in the community don't have a lot of access to these primary care doctors. Do you find, or did you find when you started this up, that what they were doing was running from specialist to specialist?
Yeah.
And what does that do?
So I'll come back to the ninja topic. You know, there's a really, I had the privilege of doing my residency at Harvard Medical School, and there's a one of the hospitals there that's called the Brigham and Women's Hospital, and there's a professor there at the medical school who wrote a great paper one time talking about this idea of, you know, who needs to go to the emergency department. And the reason that that's interesting is this, he tells the story in this paper of when he was, I believe when he was a medical student, had all of a sudden terrible pain in his chest and thought nothing of it. And his significant other wanted him to go to the hospital. He kept saying no. And then finally, right around the time he lost consciousness, you know, this person called 911, brought him in, and he got to the emergency department and had what was truly a life-threatening emergency. It's called a spontaneous pneumothorax. It's a collapsed lung that in cases like that is often fatal. Very quickly fixed, and one of the most satisfying things you can do in a trauma bay. But still, you know, here's this guy who's a brilliant, at that time, I believe he's a medical student, who he was trying to triage himself and triage himself wrong. And then flash forward 5 or 10 years, he was arrested. Same thing happened, went to the emergency department, and nothing was wrong. Right? And then flash forward again, now he's, I believe, a full professor at Harvard Medical School, and had the same thing happen. And again, didn't triage himself right. And so, you know, I always ask this, if we've got a full professor at Harvard Medical School who can't triage himself to the right setting for care, do our patients stand a chance? The answer to that's no. And it's not, for me, specialists have a really unique role to play. I wrote something on this not too long ago, but we specialize in medicine not because we don't care about the whole person, but because if we all had to be experts in every field of medicine, we'd have to live 300 years. Right? And I say that very seriously.
No,
we do this with every field. And so, you know, there is an entire field of medicine. I wrote a blog post about this on my website that's all about neurosurgery at the base of the skull. That is an entire field of medicine.
Wow.
And you can be a skull-based neurosurgeon. That person can't manage simple high blood pressure, right? Because they had to focus them. And so the reason that I say this, primary care is the last place where we have the luxury of thinking about you not as a disease or a collection of organs, but a human being. And it doesn't mean that we're perfect, but it means that we have to focus on you as a human being, help you navigate that system. And the other thing is, you know, a lot of times patients don't want to go to the specialist. They want the answer from the person that knows them the best and they trust. We have an environment now where patients go to the specialist because they're told to go. Primary care doctors refer to the specialist because there's a little bit of, you kind of want to cover yourself. You may know the answer, but you think they want to go. And so what we've tried to do is, look, when a patient needs a specialty consultant, we help them navigate that system. And that's a part of what we do at Oak Street, is take on that complexity so that they don't have to find out, I have this condition and I need this procedure, who's the best person? We know who that person is. We have a relationship with that person. But in cases where, you know, somebody has something that we can handle, our goal is to keep that in the walls of our clinics at Oak Street, mm-hmm. and manage those conditions with transparency and confidence with mm-hmm. our patients so that they understand what's going on. And I think even beyond that, we're trying to be both a quarterback and a concierge and keep people who very honestly, our patients, whether it's, you know, they're 83 years old, can't drive or navigate the CTA, which is our transit here in Chicago, and live alone or can't drive or whatever those things would be. You know, we're doing things now like telepsychiatry, where patients can see their psychiatrist by, they get a van ride to Oak Street, they see their doctor, we can have them see their psychiatrist from our clinic, the psychiatrist not in the building, but they can have a visit remotely, and then they can take the van ride home. And we don't do that necessarily because it pays for itself. We do that because otherwise they're not going to have access to that care. And again, like, that's the way that the practice works.
You know, I love that. Like, I keep shaking my head vigorously to all these things that you say, because, you know, what you keep layering success on top of each other. You know, we start with the success of just being able to have some extra time with the patient for the physician. We start building that relationship with the physician. We also build that relationship within that community center.
Yeah.
And then if we're able to get them to feel strong enough or feel comfortable enough to be able to then be able to have, like you said, that telepsychiatry, we are just making this person, taking those steps that we need to make that person well.
You know what it reminds me of? As a fellow blogger, Tammy and I had an incident, an interesting experience this week that brought Tammy to a thought that made me very angry. And that was, you know, there's three things we need in healthcare to really meet someone's needs: the education, the tools to do it right, and then the supportive environment in which to have it. And what I'm hearing you say, and this is what I was thinking about earlier today, is that's what Oak Street Health kind of has, is a supportive environment. Because we had this controversy in the car. We were saying, well, what is a supportive environment? And my God, that's the one thing she and I can't create. Any one single person can't create. And boy, isn't that frustrating. And what is a supportive environment? And is it just the number of people that you can create to be on a team to support that one patient? And it sounds like you have that. I mean, you even bring them in, you know, via technology if necessary. And I think that's really, really cool.
I think that's amazing that you've been able to build all these things to create some patient success. And you know, I think it just bodes very well for being able to care for people. I think that's just kind of an amazing thing.
You're nice. I agree with you. It's always a little bit funny because I'm the one that is often invited to have these sorts of discussions with folks. But, you know, look, we have the best team. I always joke with people that if you do the math on the number of teams in the NBA and the number of players in the NBA and the number of players in the NBA who make the All-Star team, the likelihood of a job applicant to Oak Street getting a job is less likely than an NBA player making the All-Star team.
Wow.
And that's real. And I say that because, look, you can give me credit, but, you know, Francina and the team there in Blue Island and the team around, like, they do this. And I don't – look, my biggest complaint around here is that I love seeing patients. I'm not one of those doctors who was trying to find something else to do. Ultimately, when they lose me around here, it'll be to go back to the hospital full time. It's probably a long ways off, but we take care of the sweetest group of folks, and I also have a luxury by having built up the bizarre fee-for-service mm-hmm. system where we can think about solving problems for our patients a little bit different.
Absolutely. I think one of the things that I find really interesting is that, and it's something that Kathy and I talk about all the time, you know, if we can educate people, you know, and we educate really highly in the dementia piece, mm-hmm. you know, can we help to educate someone that's caring for someone with dementia in a certain way? It's going to help them make their job easier. You know, in essence, what you've done is you've been able to help everyone create their, you know, basically do the job easier, because the more that we have this contact with that person, the better outcomes we have. And that being said, I know that you've something was published, I think, recently, like this week, I think.
A couple weeks ago
in the New England Journal of Medicine.
Technically, it's what's called the New England Journal of Medicine Catalyst, which is the outlet for the New England Journal. Looking at innovative care models and improvements in the way that we take care of people. The journal itself is for randomized controlled trials of biologic drugs in lung cancer and things like that, which are important. But you're right. So it's the New England Journal is I don't know if you can think of it. It's like the Super Bowl of medical mm-hmm. journals. It's published by the Massachusetts Medical Society, which is the Mass General Hospital where I did my residency in. Yeah, the article was, I wrote it with two colleagues here, in fact, the two folks that started the practice with me. And it was really a pretty, look, not to compliment myself, but it was intended to be a readable summary of what we do at Oak Street. And if you go to either my website or the Oak Street Health website or to the New England Journal Catalyst website or just Google this, you can find the article. But it's really a summary of both the economic model that we use, the care model that we use, and importantly, some of the outcomes that we've had in terms of improvements in the quality of care that our patients receive, the preventive care that they receive, and frankly, the way they feel about their care.
Well, I found this interesting in a time when, you know, with managed health care and the accountable care organizations, yeah. Obamacare, whatever you want to call that whole
sure.
whole thing, slew of things. One of the big things is hospital readmissions. I mean, yeah. that's a big thing. And as I was reading through some of this, it states here that you have achieved a 40% reduction in hospitalizations.
Yeah. The numbers that I would use for that, here's the way that I encourage people to think of it. This is what I do with our teams. For every 1,000 older adults, there are about 315 hospital admissions per year, right? So if you have 1,000 older adults, not all of them are going to go to the hospital, call it 20%. So 200 of them are going to go to the hospital, something like that. But they're not all going to go once, some are going to go more. So there's 315 hospital admissions per 1,000 older adults per year. And when I say hospital admissions, this means you go in, you're sick enough to stay overnight. That's mm-hmm. what I mean. 315 for Chicago. The last time that for which we have good data on this is from the Dartmouth Atlas. So you can look that up as well. But it's for the city of Chicago, for a variety of reasons that are related to the demographics, the number of hospitals here, healthcare disparity, it's about 359 and a half, call it 360 for the city of Chicago. The 90th percentile, which means, you know, 90 is an A minus mm-hmm. from what I remember mm-hmm. in high school. So getting an A minus means you'd be around 250 hospital admissions, because lower is better. People don't want to go to the hospital. Oak Street runs a little over 200.
Wow.
So if you just go from 360 to 200, that's how we get that 40% reduction. And there's some technicality in the statistics there that were you to be interested you know, we could talk through, and I'm happy to post that stuff on my blog if you're interested. But that's where that comes from. And for me, if you think about it now, we at Oak Street, I mean, I don't know if you know this, you know who pays our patients' bills when they go to the hospital?
I'm going to take a stab at this. It's probably you.
Yeah, it's Oak Street. So now there again, I want to simplify this for a bit of a non-technical audience, but the way that value-based care, and you talked about accountable care, you started talking about these things, is we're accountable for that. So in many ways, like, we put our money where our mouth is. If we don't do a good job taking care of people and everybody ends up in the hospital and we're on the hook to pay for all that, we're not going to be here very long.
Right.
So the way for us to really prove, not just to ourselves and not just to our patients, but to their families and our communities, is that if we can keep people well and out of the hospital, then the money that we would have spent in the hospital, we keep and we can reinvest in all kinds of other services. So when you ask, how are we able to see people more often and longer, that's where it comes from. How are we able to provide a van service to and from clinic appointments for people who qualify, and that's the overwhelming majority of our patients? That's where that comes from. How have we been able to invest in in-house care management, having behavioral health services, pharmacies in some of our clinics, social events for our patients? How does all that work? That's how that works, is committing to this idea that we're going to deliver on a promise of taking fundamentally better care of you, keeping you out of the hospital. And when we do, the savings are what enable the model to work.
You know, I'm going to, I know Kathy has another question that she really wants to talk to you about. And I think this goes back a little bit more to the relationship building part of it. And I don't know if you want to.
So, right. So with working primarily, if not exclusively, with the older adults, I would imagine that you have many that are going to, at some point in time, they are going to pass away. Are your doctors, how do your doctors approach that conversation? Are they comfortable with that? And how do you feel about that on a personal level?
Yeah. On a personal level, and I'll answer that first, is that has been one of the things that has been both most meaningful to me as a physician and hardest but most valuable in my own family. And what I mean by that is I have had very close family members who I would love to have had more time with. But part of my job, I think part of the job of a physician as an advocate, is to recognize when we have those opportunities for a graceful exit from the stage. And it doesn't mean that we're speeding things up. That's not what it means.
Right.
What it means is that when we have the opportunity for, and graceful can be however you define it, to make sure people know that that's what happened. I've done the same thing for my own grandmother, helping my family understand that here is our opportunity, here's her opportunity. And the second thing is making sure that it's okay, that everybody knows that it's okay. And one of the most meaningful experiences I've ever had taking care of patients was in the hospital, in the emergency department at Mass General, when a patient comes in from a nursing home with bad COPD, or what you may call emphysema, who had been in and out of the hospital. And I remember when he got there realizing how he was, and his daughter showed up, and I told them exactly that. I said, I would want to know, if I were in your shoes, that we have a person who is incredibly critically ill and has been in and out of the hospital and has been through this and has made it clear to us that in the past he didn't want any more of that. We're at a point where we can make a decision to put a breathing tube in and go full, you know, full bore here, or we cannot. And I want you to know that I will help you make this decision, but we should reflect his wishes, not our own wishes. And one of the most meaningful things was that gentleman, whose face I can still see, did end up passing, and his daughters were really grateful for the way that progressed. And it's not, they needed an advocate to help find that time. And what was lucky was that that gentleman had had a conversation with them and with the PCP to be able to know what his wishes were. And that sounds only to honor his wishes. That's what I'd aspire to for us at Oak Street. I'll tell you, it is hard. And I think it takes time to build those relationships. And often what you'll hear is just the blanket statement, we should do end of life plans. We should do that. But it takes some time to get to know each other. And it takes some time to know that you've got my best interest in mind.
Right.
It takes some time for a lot of patients. Look, I'm in my 30s. For me to be comfortable with my own mortality, I'm not there.
Right.
I don't want to have that.
Right.
So I don't know if 50 years later I'll feel differently, but we can't just assume that our patients are all ready to talk about this.
Right.
What I can tell you is that we are systematic at Oak Street about doing that. We have not only geriatricians, but we have physicians who are trained in palliative care. Something like 8 or 9% of our patients have active cancer. That means we've got to be on top of this. Our care managers, the typical profile for our care managers is licensed clinical social workers who have done a lot of this discussion with patients as well. And where we need to go is to continue to improve the way we educate our patients. We're not afraid to have the conversation. I'm not afraid to have the conversation. I think in a lot of cases, patients are afraid, mm-hmm. and building those relationships is the first way to get there.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Kathy, I don't know if you have any other questions. So one of the questions that I have for you before we let you go and wrap all of this up is, I'm curious, what does the future hold for Oak Street Health?
You know, we're so used to growing. And what I mean by that is I started this practice with two friends of mine in a kitchen in an apartment in Lincoln Park, which is in the neighborhood on the north side of Chicago. And we went from quitting jobs and assuring our significant others that this would work out to a place where it turned out to work. I think people think that this is, this is look, it's worth to talk about it, I guess. We ended up here today from that.
Right.
Our team is used to growing in ways that are really easy to measure. They're used to growing in number of clinics and number of patients and number of doctors, and we'll continue to do that. I think it's far more interesting to think about the way that we grow and how we serve our patients. And that may mean that we add additional services, that we add additional ways to interact with patients. One of the things I'm really excited to do is to begin to do, and we're going to be piloting this pretty soon, begin to do some monitoring of patients in the home so that they don't have to come to clinic for us to have meaningful information about how they're doing and can interact with them in different ways. So I will continue to add patients. Frankly, I can't stop patients from coming to see us at this point. And we have a whole team that spends their time now just finding and hiring the best doctors in our geographies because we have more patients than we have providers to see them. We'll continue that. We'll add clinics as well. What we like to think of as our specialty is to go to what are traditionally underserved urban neighborhoods and build communities of patients that we can serve really well there. And there's lots of space like that to go, not just in Chicago and Rockford and Northwest Indianapolis where we are, but in all kinds of other places. But as a guy who loves taking care of patients, I'm excited to see the extra stuff we can do. I don't know that patients are expecting us to do that will help us improve the quality of care that they receive.
Absolutely. So you have alluded to the fact that you have a blog.
I do.
So I want you to share with us what that blog is so
sure.
Everybody that's listening can get to it and read your words of wisdom.
You're very nice. I'm not good at plugging myself. We talked about this before. I started writing this because my team and my colleagues here at Oak Street asked me to share these things. And I spend a lot of my time in the medical literature trying to make sure that the latest evidence and the latest science is incorporated in our practice. And that's really where it started from, was reading and sharing and writing about that and writing for no audience. And now they make me post it. The website is easy to find. It is www.griffinmyers.com, GRIFFINMYERS.com. The blog itself is really topics around healthcare innovation, what we call value-based care, which is this idea that we're going to get away from the haircut model and move towards getting paid for great care. Lots of topics for patients and for families and for people who are interested in taking better care of them. And as you might be able to tell from the talks we talked about today, some pretty approachable economics. So I've talked a lot about, as we talked about before, older adults and the ways that they experience the healthcare system. I've talked about the value or not of wearing helmets when riding bikes. lots of things. But yeah, it's there, and I would love comments. And most of the topics that I cover come from readers emailing.
You know what? I can see why your team has urged you to write this blog, because you've taken some topics that are kind of tough to understand at times and put them into layman's terms that people can understand. So if your blog is like that, I'll read it.
That's essentially all that my blog is.
I will read it then. So.
Yeah.
What we'll also do is we'll, on our Facebook page and our website as well, we'll make sure that that information is on there too, so that anybody that's listening can get to that pretty easily. So, and then before I let you go to Oak Street Health, how can we find out more about Oak Street Health?
Yeah, easy. It is www.oakstreethealth.com. Anybody who's listening to this is on the internet, and because you're on the internet, you can get to our website, and there are all kinds of ways to interact with us there. We are on social media, on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, on LinkedIn. You can find us there. The website's probably the best way to get to know us. Links to what's going on at Oak Street, what's going on in our community centers, who our leadership team is, who our doctors are, maps around clinics, descriptions of services, and then all of the media coverage and all the articles that we've talked about is all there as well.
Can you share with us real quickly, I think I know a little bit about this, but the rest of the listeners don't, how you came up with the name Oak Street?
Yeah, I love this story because it is a classic kitchen table startup story.
That's the best.
Yeah. You know, without naming names, most healthcare companies take a bunch of vowels, smash them together, and create words. And you can play that game.
There's some
B's
in there or whatever.
Yeah.
Big,
right?
That's right. I'm not going to take them, but that's what they do. And for us, we wanted something, and the feeling that we wanted was simple, authentic, and always local. And simple means words that you've heard of before. authentic comes in what those words are. And the street idea came from this idea of being always local. We're not located on Oak Street, but we took the idea of a street and said, let's go with that. So you may know this. Do you know the most common street name in America?
I'm going to say it's Oak.
It is not Oak Street.
Oak is like Oak Street.
Yeah, it's Second Street.
That's right.
The second most common?
Third Street?
Main. Oh, what about,
it's Third Street.
I wanted Main Street.
The
what
fourth
about Main
most
Street?
Common is the third most common is Main Street. And then not too far after that is Oak Street. And that really became for us this idea of it is any town USA. But in words that we've heard of before and something that is simple, authentic, and always local, and it's easy to say. And that's how we ended up on Oak Street. And now we've kind of taken it and run with it. We, you know, our teammates we call each other Okies, and very rarely do you get the full Oak Street Health. A lot of people just say Oak Street. So it's become, it turned out to be a good guess, I suppose.
Awesome. Yeah.
You know what, I think that's a great story for us to end on and tie a ribbon on. And, you know, we want to thank you so much for being on the show and letting us, you know, come into the den of Oak Street Health. I don't know if that goes with a tree. Maybe I should have, you know, I don't know, tree house, you know,
yeah,
maybe
it
I should
is.
Have gone.
It's called the tree house. No, you're very welcome. I'm flattered to be invited. I really appreciate letting me tell the story of our patients and our teams, and hopefully you'll have me back sometime.
Absolutely. We would love to have you back. You know, whether you want to come back monthly or every other month, we'd be happy to have you. You've been such a great guest. And, you know, I think for Kathy and
well,
I.
Now that we know Griffin, we can get real pretty. And that's what I like to do.
Yes, our next, our, yes.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, you've just laid the groundwork for us to just really get deep in our later conversations. But, you know, I think, you know, as Kathy and I are two women with our startup company, we've been, you know, at this a year, we take a lot of, you know, we're excited to see that you've grown so much and
that it's
promising.
Yes, yes.
Here.
I swear, spouse, I will make the
right.
conversation
right.
so timely.
See, and
right
that's what's nice for me is I don't have a spouse that conversation. So it worked out pretty easily for me. I just talked to myself about it. So, but you know, thank you so much for being on the show. And we definitely want to thank everyone for listening. And if you need any of this information on Oak Street Health, make sure you step by our Facebook page, which is just go to Facebook, Google Silver Dawn Radio. You'll find that. And there you can find the information on how to get to their website, how to get to Griffin's blog, and then, of course, learn more information about who's going to be on the show.
Next week, we have an amazing guest as well. Her name is Kathy Borey. She has written the book, The Long Hello. She talks about the journeys she took with her mother as she was going through the end stages of dementia. It's a beautifully written book. If you haven't had a chance to read it, go out now, buy it, download it, have someone read it to you, however you want to do that. It's a great book, and she has a lot of insight. So we'll look forward to having her on the show as well. Once again, if you want to follow us online on Twitter, you can follow us at Silver Dawn Radio. Make sure to get over there. We tweet about the shows as well. So thank you so much for tuning in to Silver Dawn Radio, and be well.